The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to another episode of Believe in Rangers, a New York Rangers podcast presented by Blue York on the Believe Podcast Network. I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus, and on the show today is my friend from the Action Network, my colleague, Nick Martin. Going to talk a lot about sports betting. Obviously, super happy that sports betting is now legal in the state of New York. I'm super pumped. So very fun and different perspective on today's interview, but also have Alexis Downey joining me to talk about everything going on in the NHL. So we've got that. We've got a lot more. Let's get into it.
It's a hat trick for Mika Zibanejad. Kako shoots, he scores! Kako!
Let's go Rangers! Let's go Rangers!
So it seems like this season the Rangers have been one of those teams that's been able to avoid the COVID bug. But that's hitting us now on this West Coast trip. Obviously, we saw a lot of kids come in and the taxi squad get called up for the game in Anaheim the other night. I know Panarin and Shesterkin were out in Vegas before that when the Rangers lost 5-1, even though I thought that Mark Stone goal was very controversial. If that's not a kicking motion, I'm not really sure what exactly is. It looked to me like Mark Stone extended his left leg when the puck went in. I know he turned his skate prior to that, but I think there's still movement of a kicking motion before that puck goes in. Obviously, that's a huge call that changes the game. If the Rangers get that break, then it's still a 1-1 hockey game, but the Rangers don't get it. It's 2-1, and then Janmark had that really nice goal to make it 3-1, and obviously Brett Howden has been the best player in the NHL against the Rangers this year. He scored in both games against the Rangers, but I thought it was a really strong bounce-back performance in Anaheim the other night, and guys stepping up like Ryan Lindgren with two goals, even though one was an empty netter, and Jared Tinordi added the game winner, even though he got a lucky bounce, but it's still great to see those guys scoring. It's great to see Mika get his seventh goal in his last eight games. Mika's getting hot at a pretty good time without Panarin in the lineup, although it is nice to see Panarin back in practice in LA, so it looks like Panarin's going to play tonight. I did hear that Gerard Gallant has COVID, so I don't believe Gerard Gallant, that his last name is pronounced Gallant. I don't think Gerard Gallant will be on the bench for this game in LA, so it should be a really interesting game tonight. Both teams don't generate much 5-on-5, so it might come down to special teams. The Rangers' power play has obviously been one of the better power plays in the league, and hopefully they can keep LA off the board on their power play. But it should be a good matchup, a rematch from the 2014 Stanley Cup Final. I think it's great that the Rangers keep finding ways to win. A lot of people are expecting some regression in the second half of the year, but they've shown a ton of resilience, especially as a young team, which I feel like you don't see very often. So that's really exciting right now as a Rangers fan. Georgiev has also stepped up and been great in the absence of Igor. I don't know when we'll get Igor back, but it's really important and paramount that we have good backup goaltending. I don't know if Kincaid will get the start tonight. I'm going to assume they're going to go back with Georgiev because he looked great in Anaheim, although the Rangers didn't let up a ton on him. I know we outshot the Ducks. At one point, it was 15-0 in the third period, so the Rangers really dominated that third period in Anaheim, but helping out their goaltender as much as they can is definitely important. I also saw, while we're on goaltending, I saw that Igor Shesterkin was left off the All-Star list, which is really surprising. The Metro goalies are Ilya Sorokin and Freddie Anderson. And Sorokin, yeah, he's been great for the Islanders, but he's been nowhere near what Igor Shesterkin has been for the Rangers this year. Freddie Anderson is tough to argue with. Freddie's been great for Carolina all season long. Like I said on prior episodes, I actually did take Freddie Anderson to win the Vezina, so I'm pretty pumped to see him do well. But yeah, for me, taking Ilya Sorokin over Igor Shesterkin in the All-Star game just makes absolutely zero sense. Representing the Rangers is going to be Chris Kreider, who's been obviously outstanding all year. Artemi Panarin, who's pretty much a lock to be an All-Star every season. And then Adam Fox will be playing in his first All-Star game because there wasn't one last year. So I'm excited to see Foxy in Vegas for All-Star weekend. I think he'll have a great time, as well as Panarin and Kreider. And I still don't get how Igor was left off. But that's going to do it for my little monologue for this week. Before I go into my conversation with Alexis Downey, I do want to give a second to talk about our sponsor, Blue York. They're a fan-made brand that makes custom designs, content, and apparel. For the blue shirts, I'm rocking the sweatshirt right now, the white one with the embroidered R on it. Pretty sick. The Rangers font and the Rangers colors. So check them out, iambluyork.com, or go to their social media at iambluyork on Instagram and Twitter, iambluyork. Go, and when you go to their website, use code Johnny, J-O-N-N-Y, to get 15% off of everything on their website. That's J-O-N-N-Y. So now I'm going to send it over to my friend, Alexis Downey. As always, very happy to welcome on my friend, Alexis Downey, to cover everything going on right now, trending in the NHL. So live from Ellicottville, New York, a place I've never even heard of. Without further ado, Alexis Downey, what's going on?
You know, I got some great skiing in yesterday. It rained today, so it wasn't as nice, but It's been a good weekend for me. How's your weekend going?
Yeah, you got a lovely ski sweater on there. Vineyard Vine,
yes,
looks like.
Yes. Yep. Yep. My whales and the blue and everything. Mm-hmm. Some nice color.
I don't think I've been skiing in like 15 years. I've only went skiing like one time in my life.
Okay.
I've been like, my friends are like planning a ski trip and I just like said, no, I don't even know if I would be good. Everyone says like, it's an easy, you know, correlation with hockey and everything. But for some reason, I don't know. I used to like try to snowboard, but I can't get into skiing for some reason. I don't know why. So maybe you can sell me on it.
Yeah. You know, I love it. I've been skiing like my entire life. I was in ski club when I went to Michigan State. So, and that's really big
that's
there.
Cool.
Uh-huh. But it's something that's a lot of fun. And I feel like as you get older, it's harder to learn, but once you learn it, it's kind of like riding a bike. Once you get back into it, you know what you're doing, you can keep going. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it's such a fun hobby. Like there's the culture around it is really fun. And I actually saw quite a few Sabres jerseys yesterday, which was kind of weird to see. There's some Taylor Hall, a bunch of different ones, but I kind of forgot. I was like, oh yeah, I am in New York. Oh yeah, I'm by Buffalo too.
Well, they're all skiing instead of going to the games.
Yeah, that's so true. Everyone was waiting for the Bills games.
Uh-huh. Exactly. It's funny too. The only thing that I love about skiing, and I don't know if you can relate, but the South Park episode when they go skiing, I think is one of the funniest things. They go to Aspen. I don't know if you've seen that.
I can't say I've seen it, but I have been to Aspen. I went there actually last February. So
that's cool. Oh, so you're a big skier.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So. Well, I have nothing to relate, but that's cool.
Well, we can just jump into all the hockey that's been going on. And specifically, one thing that I really do want to start out with, our prayers, our thoughts, everything goes into the community up in Connecticut, the family of Teddy Balkind. Really, really tragic story. And I feel so much for everyone in his community right now.
Yeah. My mom actually texted me, I guess I don't really watch the news at night, but my mom had saw it on the news. And, you know, obviously I don't really like hearing these stories or reading about these stories, but I couldn't really help myself because it was all over social media. So did my due diligence and, you know, read what happened. And I don't want to repeat it on here because I don't know the exact story, but, you know, everyone that has heard can only imagine what happened. So, you know, obviously just as someone who grew up playing hockey, it's like, I can't imagine anything, you know, being scarier. And obviously, like, my thoughts are not only with the family of, you know, Teddy Balkind, but also with the family of, you know, the kid who collided with him or, you know, whatever happened there. But just obviously a horrible scene. And, you know, hopefully the hockey community can come together and figure something out for the new Cannon community and Connecticut hockey in general. And, you know, everyone will be thinking of the Balkind family and just that area, you know, for a long time.
Definitely. And it's been great to see all of the NHL teams and players that, you know, have also been voicing their prayers and their thoughts for Teddy as well and the family and everything. So But kind of a little switch gears, not as much of a somber topic, kind of something really exciting for Marc-Andre Fleury happened this week when he made his return back to the fortress against his former team, the Vegas Golden Knights. He now has a win against all 32 teams in the NHL, the first ever goaltender to have that in the history. And I think that is just such a cool thing to say that you did. Like, I know that that's happened a lot in like the NFL and stuff. And what a cool thing for Fleury, a guy that's just kind of at the end of his career. He's achieved so much, and to just add one more thing to that list, it's something that doesn't really surprise me from him.
It's funny, because when I saw that, I was thinking back to like Henrik Lundqvist. Did he not play against Vegas? Because I feel like he would have been the first one to do it too. Oh, I guess Seattle.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, Fleury's got kind of an unfair advantage, I think, in that department. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess at this point now, the whole like, since we have Seattle, I'm sure that there maybe another guy in the past that's done it.
I can't think of one that's been around as long as Fleury. Maybe Carey Price, if he was playing this year.
Yeah.
He could have done it. But yeah, I can't think of another goalie that's really like been around long enough to do so. At least a starter right now.
Right. And I have to give a shout out, because my friend Jason Ross was on the call for the Blackhawks broadcast, his very first TV broadcast, and he did an outstanding job. And I was just really excited that he was able to call a game that got a victory as well, because he was actually on the radio call for the Colorado Blackhawks game that I was at over the past week. And we know that one ended in a crazy way. Cale Makar, someone that you know pretty well, had an outstanding goal, one of the goals of the year topic or candidates right now. And that goal was insane to watch.
It's honestly so funny too, because when everyone was like just like raving and ranting about it, I didn't really think it was like anything crazy, just because I've seen Cale do it so many times. Like, you know, that's like a play that he would typically make. You know, obviously the finish was incredible going to his backhand. I think anyone would have anticipated him to kind of go around Fleury to his forehand, but the way that he like juked forehand, went backhand shelf, was pretty impressive. I mean, I haven't seen him really use his backhand much in the time that I spent playing with him. But yeah, no, I was definitely not surprised on the fact that he had such a nice goal. You know, me personally, I tried to avoid going one-on-one with him every time in practice to not look like Kirby Dach in that scenario. But yeah, no, obviously a sick finish. And like a lot of people have said, Cale is basically the Connor McDavid for defensemen. Like, nobody skates like him. Maybe Quinn Hughes a little bit, but nobody has that explosive speed and that quick agility that he had in that play just to cut back like that. Even fooled the cameraman, like the camera guy had the camera toward the blue line, and Cale, you know, I have never seen that kind of skill on a defenseman, I don't think, in my entire life. And I know obviously it's hard to compare like the Bobby Orr's and the defenseman, you know, from a generation before us, but to where the game has gone and to where players are now and the way they develop, I don't know if there's anyone out there like Cale Makar that can just switch gears like that.
All this young generation that we've seen of talent in the NHL, it's really cool for us, because, you know, that is our age group. And just to watch these guys kind of grow and develop and come into these roles is a pretty cool thing. And I remember I was watching that play and I was like, Cale is going to do something. I just had this feeling he was going to do something with the puck, and he did it. And I audibly said, wow, in the press box. And I think a lot of other people did too. But really, really a cool night for him. Kind of sticking in the Central Division as well, the Predators have been,
I wanted to say one more thing on that topic. The best part about the entire goal was Cale's celebration, because you never really see him show that much emotion. I never saw him celly really in college much, and to see him, you know, go down on one knee and scrape ice and have that kind of emotion to that goal was just the icing on the cake for that play.
You knew he knew that it was a good goal. Definitely.
He knew that I had the over and it hit on that goal.
That too. Yeah. Well, like I was saying, sticking with the Central Division, the Nashville Predators have been very, very good. definitely something that we weren't necessarily expecting. We thought maybe they'd be more of a team that was kind of going to start rebuilding. And then all of a sudden they've just taken their talent, done really well, great goaltending, goal scoring. They kind of have it all. And, you know, they have 48 points right now, actually leading the West as well. And they did have some COVID issues. They had the pause as well. But since then, you know, they've been 8-1-1 in their last 10 games with a 4-game win streak. Just a really hot team, and certainly not what I expected. But does this mean that they're going to be legit as the season goes on? Are they going to keep this up? Are we going to see them in the postseason? All of those questions I feel like are pretty valid right now.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of touched on it a little bit in this interview with Nick Martin, just about the Western Conference seeming to be a little bit weaker than the East right now. But the one thing that's concerning about Nashville, as good as they've been, as good as they are, the one thing where I look at them and I'm like, ah, can they really keep this up, is Roman Josi leading them in points. And as good as Roman Josi is, I feel like it's never a good sign when a defenseman leads your team in scoring, you know, no matter who that defenseman is. Even the Rangers right now with Fox, you know, it's a little concerning that the Rangers are only generating goals pretty much on the power play. They're not really generating much 5-on-5. So I kind of look at that also with Nashville, where I'm not exactly sure what their power play percentage is right now or where they are as far as the league rankings go on the power play. But if I'm just looking at the stat sheet right now and I see Roman Josi at the top, I'm just thinking like, oh, a lot of their production comes in the power play. And that might not even be 100% accurate, but you know, they do have guys like Philip Forsberg, who's been great. He's got 18 goals this year, and Matt Duchene's been great. He has 14 goals. You know, Matt Duchene obviously was a guy like 5 years ago who was probably considered one of the top centers in the league and has kind of fallen off a little bit, it seems like, when he went to Ottawa and now he's in Nashville. But good to see that he's found his production again. But yeah, I mean, listen, I don't think this team's going to finish first in the Central. I'm just going to tell you that straight up. But, you know, them sticking around the top and getting a wild card spot in the playoffs is definitely not a far-fetched goal.
Yeah, and they haven't won a playoff round since 2018. So maybe this is the year that they do win one, if they don't have to play, you know, a Colorado or a Vegas or whoever it may be in the postseason. And it's kind of funny because they are welcoming the Avalanche to Nashville on Tuesday, which I'm going to get to because that's going to be one of my best bets.
Okay.
But I think that that will be a good game on Tuesday. And there's just been so much good hockey and so much to be excited about recently. Nikita Kucherov coming back. I mean, he's someone that every time he's on the ice, it's exciting to watch him.
He is so scary good. It's insane. It really is. It's insane. He is. I mean, the same thing happened last year, right? Like he missed like the entire season, joined in the playoffs, came right back, like took over. And you saw it the other night. I forgot who their opponent was. Who'd they play the other night when Kucherov had 2 assists?
Calgary.
Yes. Thank you. That definitely slipped my mind. But yeah, I mean, he looks like he's missed no time. And, you know, I don't think it's crazy to think that Tampa can three-peat. You know, this team is so good, and they didn't really lose so much from their Stanley Cup teams the last few years. I know like Yanni Gourde, obviously, and Barclay Goodrow are two names that not necessarily stick out, but two names that we're familiar with, obviously, with the depth and everything. But yeah, I don't think it's crazy to think that they can three-peat. So Kucherov is just unbelievable and fun to watch.
Definitely. And I mean, they didn't end up winning their game against the Bruins on Saturday, but he still had 5 shots on goal, speaking to his production as well. And I think that one of the things with Tampa, I mean, we know that they have that depth, and it's just continued to show. I mean, getting him back in the lineup, they couldn't be too comfortable with him because they've had to play so much without him. Mm-hmm. And it's almost just like he's just that added extra piece that just makes them so elite. I don't know about three-peating, but they're definitely going to be, they know how to play in the postseason. They know how to play when the games are meant to be won. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Tampa as we get down the line in the season. But another fun player that's recently been fun to watch, at least, Trevor Zegras. You can speak about that. I mean, the Ducks played the Rangers and he certainly tried a few interesting moves.
Yeah. I mean, he just stands out every time he's out there. It was so fun watching him on Saturday night, even though these West Coast games, the Rangers have been on this West Coast trip, and it's so hard to stay up to like 1 a.m. every night watching games. But, you know, when a guy like Zegras is out there, it's just so much fun. And, you know, I know you saw he tried that alley-oop or whatever you want to call it again, whatever the Zegras play is. I actually saw on Twitter someone called it the Dishigan, and I thought that was like the best name that I've seen. I thought that was really cool. I like the Dishigan.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think they should keep it as the Dishigan. I thought it was awesome. But He didn't necessarily do the same thing because he didn't pick it up on a stick, but he did like that flip play. But he hit a crossbar, and if that goal goes in, who knows if the Rangers, you know, end up winning. That definitely changes the game. But yeah, he is just so fun to watch. I mean, I don't even know. He just tries something new, it looks like, every shift.
I'm pretty sure he was the rookie of the month in December for the NHL. So I feel like that was obviously for a reason. And I know the Ducks are playing tonight against the Red Wings because that game was postponed on Thursday. They're playing it tonight. So maybe we'll see something from Zegras in the highlights later tonight.
Yeah, I want to add one more thing too, actually, now that just came to my mind. I watch The Point pretty much every Thursday on ESPN. I don't know if you watch it every week with like Pucci.
Yeah, when I can. Yep, yep.
So Emily Kaplan did that amazing piece on Jack Hughes last week. I don't know if you got a chance to see it.
I haven't watched it yet, but I listened to her podcast and she talked about when she was with him for that day. And I have been meaning to see it because it sounds like it was a really, really fun piece. And she said how much she enjoyed hanging out with him.
Yeah, he's, I mean, I actually met him at a bar like last summer in New York, and he's like the coolest kid.
Oh,
yeah, he's awesome.
Really?
But that's a weird brag. But no, I was just bringing that up because like a guy like Zegras and a guy like Jack Hughes, like all these young kids that are coming in with so much confidence and so much swagger, it's so great for the game. Like I just remember listening and hearing stories about the guys like 20 years ago that would come into the NHL and they wouldn't even say a word to anybody. They just kind of kept quiet and had to like somewhat earn their confidence. But all these kids now, like especially Jack Hughes, especially Trevor Zegras, they come in with so much confidence. And maybe that's, you know, just the way of the world right now. It seems like, at least in my experience in college too, like the freshmen that came in always had like some sense of entitlement. Not necessarily saying that these guys have that sense of entitlement, but, you know, when you're kind of told how good you are your entire life, it's kind of hard not to be so confident. So I feel like for them, especially with like social media and all these like highlight videos that are posted to them when they're growing up and, you know, just having like, I'm sure Jack Hughes, I don't even know what he's at right now, but he probably had like, you know, 100,000, 300,000 followers before even being in the NHL. And that's got to get his confidence up, whatever that might mean to him. But it's just great for the game, I think, to see these kids like come in and just show personality and have swagger and all that about them. Because like 20 years ago, I feel like, you know, I'm trying to think of a rookie that came in like, and even like Ovechkin and Crosby. I mean, Ovechkin obviously had his like sellies and celebrations, but Crosby was always like super serious. And, you know, it's great to see these guys just like have fun and not necessarily not care, but, you know, just be themselves.
You know, I think you make a really good point there because this is something that I think the NHL really needs to embrace. Embrace these young guys, market these young guys. It's going to help the league in the long run. And yes, you're going to have those old NHL fans and all the older maybe media or, you know, whoever they may be that's a part of this game that are going to be against these people and just not for the flashiness that they kind of bring. But I think it's only going to help the league as we grow into these newer times in hockey. And I really hope that they do embrace it and help market this league and get the NHL to where it really could be, especially here in America, because it's just not a top watch sport for the most part. And it could be to an extent with all these new TV deals and like these new guys, like it's a really good opportunity for the league.
So it's funny too. I like, as you were saying this, I wanted to look up like an NBA second year guy, his Instagram following versus an NHL player. So right now,
okay.
First NBA player that comes to mind for me is like John Morant. John Morant was drafted second overall, I think like 2 years ago. He's got 4.5 million followers on Instagram. Let's go to Jack. Yeah. Just guess what Jack uses at.
300,000 to 400,000.
Literally spot on. 334K. First overall draft pick. But that's part of it. That's crazy, right? Like,
yeah.
But these guys, and Jack Hughes kind of talks about it in that ESPN piece with Emily Kaplan, like he finds it so important for players to show personality through fashion. And I think, you know, as we go along here, I think the NHL has loosened up a little bit about wearing the suits to games. But when a guy like that and a guy like Jack Hughes and Trevor Zegras, like the star caliber that they have and that they are, when they're talking about it, I feel like the NHL at some point is just going to have to concede and let them do what they want. I mean, the fact that Ja Morant has 4.5 million followers and Jack Hughes has 334, like K, to me, that's just, and listen, it's obviously Instagram's not the most important thing in the world, but that's like a huge sense of popularity. Like it just is. And anyone who might disagree with me, that's totally fair. But, you know, kids right now are on social media on their phones. They're following their favorite players. They're following the cool players. So I think that's a huge part of it too. It's just like making these guys more popular.
Yeah, I feel like Jack Hughes could be someone that's a little bit more relatable to a everyday type person than Ja Morant might be.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll kind of see what the NHL does with it in hopes that they do take this and run with it. Kind of switching again to another big thing that's a player that's really been standing out recently, Jordan Kyrou. Like ever since the Winter Classic, he has just been playing so well. 4 goals, 3 assists in the last 4 games. And he scored today, actually, the game winner, a power play goal against Dallas. So just another hot guy that's doing really well for his team, St. Louis Blues, right now. They really weren't a team that I was excited about coming into this year. And now it's like, okay, maybe I can get excited about the Blues.
Yeah, that Blues, that game yesterday against Dallas, or today, I guess, while we're recording, but yesterday, if you're listening today, pretty wild. They were down 1-0 in the final minute. Ryan O'Reilly scores with like 50 something seconds left. And then Kyrou finishes that in the last, what was it, like 15 seconds? How much time is left?
I don't know the exact time, but there wasn't much time left.
Yeah. But no, I think we talked about it last episode. The Blues are getting hot. And I don't know if you have a further comment, but I want to transition into our next topic because it has to do with the Blues.
No, go ahead.
So you and I actually talked about the Blues versus Penguins game last week because it was on TNT. And I believe you took the Blues originally. I took the Penguins. And then I went back on my gut and ended up taking the Blues, which I usually don't do. But for some reason, I felt convinced that the Blues were going to come out and win this game. But they were winning pretty much the entire game. I think they were up 3-1. Then Pittsburgh scores there. I think Brian Rust scored to make it 3-2. And then Crosby scores a controversial goal where he comes through the crease, not necessarily through the crease, but Binnington had his arm out and Crosby knocked into the arm before putting the puck in. So obviously the St. Louis Blues review the call because they called it a good goal on the ice, but they felt it was goalie interference. And then the call stands. So the Blues are wrong about their challenge and they now have to be shorthanded. So I hate that there is a rule regarding, I hate coaches review to begin with, first of all. I'm not going to get into that, but I hate even more how if you review a call and you're wrong, you are then penalized. And then the Penguins, like 9 seconds later, Evan Rodriguez scores in the power play. And just like that, my bet's over in 12 seconds. The Penguins go up 4-3. You know what I mean? I think this is going to be a huge controversial thing in the playoffs, especially, you know, imagine a very controversial call. Like imagine challenging it in the playoffs in a 1-goal game in the third period. And then, which is a questionable call too, right? Like a kicking motion or something. And then, you're wrong and then you're penalized and then they score again. It's just like, for me, if it's a really close call, I don't think there should be a penalty for it. But if it's like an obvious thing somewhat, you know, maybe, I don't know if they can really kind of go back and forth in that rule, but I don't think it should be in every coach's challenge thing. I don't know if that really makes sense, but you kind of get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, no, I get what your point is with that. And I think that like for sports across the board, it's something that seems to be kind of consistent. Like if you make the coach's call and you're wrong, then you are penalized. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they have that rule in the NFL. You lose a timeout though.
I think so. Yeah.
So
which would make much more sense if you lose a timeout.
Yeah. So maybe they need to do something more like that, but I get your frustrations because it can lead, obviously in this case it did. Yeah. It can lead to something where your bet ends up going down the drain and you lose. So yeah.
What I mean about the bet definitely made it a little more upsetting, but just the momentum of the game in general. I mean, Pittsburgh had already gotten the momentum back when Crosby scores, but then you even like add more onto it after Rodriguez scores 12 seconds later, you know?
Yeah. And I think like in the playoff situation, I mean, that would be really
change an entire series
like that. It really could, because we know how much winning one game can swing the momentum in a whole series. So yeah, I think that might be something that they could look into. And I mean, maybe put a tip into the NHL and let them know.
I mean, the only sport where I actually love the challenge, because I think it's just so cool how they do it, is tennis. I love how like there's like a ball tracker and you can kind of see like where the ball lands.
You know, okay, you watch more tennis than I do, because I don't know how any of that works. No, I don't know any of it works. Nope.
I'll send you a video of a tennis challenge after this, but it's cool. Like a player can just like request a challenge. Like I think, I don't know if there's like a limited amount of challenges they get, but there's like a computer tracker on the ball that will like, they'll go to the screen and show you like exactly on the court where the ball lands. So it could be like an inch off of the line and it's out. It's great. It's really cool. It's really cool.
Interesting. I guess all sports are different. So
yeah, I just really hate challenging though. It's so annoying.
I guess we'll see what happens with that. But we can go into our best bets this week. I kind of teased mine already a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll start with it. You know, the Predators and Avalanche in Nashville. Despite how well the Predators are playing, I think that the Avalanche are going to win that one. They've just been looking so good recently. So that's my pick for Tuesday.
I'm going to go to a game tonight, actually, Monday night. Bruins in Washington. Bruins have had a pretty strong start to the second half or start to 2022, aside from that loss to the Wild last week. But the Capitals have been right up there as well. Capitals actually lost to the Wild too. Or no, they beat the Wild the other night. But either way, both teams have been playing great hockey. Alexander Ovechkin this year has been 36 years old, scoring 24 goals in 36 games. Like, it's unheard of, I think. But, you know, obviously there's a lot of stars in that game. Backstrom, Ovechkin, Pastrnak, Marchand, Bergeron are always must-watch TV. So that'll be a really fun matchup. And I think I'm going to take the – I'm actually writing about this on the Action Network. So I probably have posted an article link out today if you're listening to this. But as of right now, my pick – is the Capitals money line. I don't know if I'm going to stick to that when I write the article tonight, but as of now, I'm doing Capitals money line in this one.
You know, it's funny because that is one of my games that I have down as well. And I also picked the Caps for that, 'cause I just feel like they're due for this win. Yeah. Like, this is usually a really good game between these two teams. It's just like the emotions. It just seems like it's a little bit of a heated ish rivalry sort of.
I would say so.
Yeah, and I picked the Caps on that one too. So that,
well, I didn't mean to steal that from you. My bad. Yeah.
No, it's okay. This is good. We're on the same page for this week, I guess.
Yeah, and here's, I'll go with my second one then, I guess, and a matchup that, you know, I feel like usually wouldn't be very exciting, but Vancouver's in Florida on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. Vancouver's obviously been another one of those teams that's been super hot under Bruce Boudreau, and Florida has been the best home ice team, I think, in the entire NHL all year. I'm pretty sure they only have like 3 losses on home ice. Is that the number I'm pretty sure I saw?
You're probably right around
like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think I might go for the underdog pick here and take Vancouver on the road in Florida. I think they've been super hot, and Florida lost to Dallas, I believe. Oh no, they played Carolina last night. What was the score of that game? They lost. They played Carolina on Saturday, and they won in overtime. They came back. It was 3-1 last time I looked. So yeah, Florida, obviously one of those teams that's been rolling all year, but Vancouver is arguably the hottest team in the NHL right now. So I'm going to go with Vancouver on the road.
Again, kind of piggybacking off of that, I had the Lightning and Canucks on Thursday because the Canucks are on a little bit of a longer road trip starting this week. And it's kind of crazy because they're playing the Panthers, the Lightning, and the Hurricanes all this week. So that is just going to be the ultimate test for them. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the Lightning are going to win this game on Thursday over the Canucks because they play really well at home. They only have 4 losses at home right now this season. So I'm going with the Lightning, probably kind of a similar record to the Panthers at home. So the Panthers must have 3 and the Lightning probably have 4.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's also obviously a good pick. It's easy to pick the home ice teams when, you know, they have such a good record on home ice. And my last one, actually, I don't really have a pick for this game yet, but Saturday at 2 o'clock, Washington, again, the Capitals are in Long Island to play the Islanders. The Islanders are going to play the Devils, I believe, on Thursday. Let me just double check. Yep. Islanders play the Devils on Thursday. So this is an Islander team that's had about 2 weeks off, you know, due to their West Coast trip getting rescheduled. I'm curious to see how they come out against the Devils. I think they'll be a little flat with the Devils. You never know what team you're going to see. So they could sneak out a win there, but, you know, obviously, like I talk about pretty much all the time, I think the Islanders are one of those teams that can just get hot and go on a streak. So if they are able to beat the Devils, who knows? I think they might be able to take the Caps on home ice. I don't know. I just expect this team to turn it around and figure something out because, listen, I like, it's funny. Like, this comes up all the time. My cousin's the biggest Ranger fan, just wants to see the Islanders like die. not actually, obviously, but, you know, wants them to suck. So for me, like I enjoy when they do well. So, which, listen, every Ranger fan might not agree with, but it's more fun when, I think the Devils too, it's more fun when the teams around here are competitive. So I do think the Islanders got completely screwed in the first half of the year with everything involving COVID. And I'm excited to watch them play in the second half.
They're probably the team with the worst luck this year so far.
Horrible. If what happened to them happened to the Rangers, I'd be writing letters to the NHL. Literally handwritten letters, not even emails. That's how angry
I am. Just add that to the coaching call.
Yeah, literally. But yeah, no, it's an exciting week of hockey. Things are really picking up. A lot to talk about, a lot of highlights to watch. So I'm really excited for the second half. I think it's going to be awesome.
I'm right there with you.
That's about all I've got for this week. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, I think that's it. Hopefully our bets do well this week.
Yeah. And without further ado, I'm going to send it over to my friend, Nick Martin. This week, I'm very happy to welcome on my colleague from the Action Network. He does an unbelievable job covering the NHL, talking about betting and a lot of underlying metrics and things that I have never even really heard of until I started with Action. So I have learned a lot from him. Very happy to welcome on my friend, Nick Martin. Nick, what's going on?
Hey, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this, really looking forward to having you on for a long time. We don't usually have a betting perspective on this show, so definitely kind of different for the listeners, but I want to start off right away. I'm in New York. I'm very pumped that New York is officially allowing sports betting. This is going to come out Monday, so by now people already have been using DraftKings, FanDuel, or whatever it is you use. But for you, I guess, I know you're in Calgary, right? You're a Canadian.
Yeah.
How exciting is it for you just to see sports betting become more and more popular in the U.S. and in states like New York? I don't even know if it's legal where you are.
It's complicated here. Like, we're actually still not going to have DraftKings until around the Super Bowl, because I actually want it specifically for the NHL. They kind of post some weird lines early. But and it's sweet for everyone, like for the articles that I write and we write, obviously. It's huge to have New York becoming legal and like actually able to play the lines on the sites that you're suggesting and such. So it'll be nice in that regard.
Yeah, I'm excited to walk into Madison Square Garden, maybe have a FanDuel something in MSG, and I can just throw in like $100 and get a ticket for the game. That'd be pretty sweet.
Oh yeah, that'd be sweet. I didn't even think of that.
Well, that's what I think they're gonna start doing, right? I think every betting company wants to have some kind of, like, I don't know how you'd word it, like a sportsbook, I guess, set up in each arena. I think that's kind of where we're headed.
Yeah. Like, my understanding of it here is that we can have the offshore ones. Like, I like Five Dimes, Pinnacle, Bet365, but we don't have the US ones. And I like player props and some of those. So, like, not having FanDuel and DraftKings is kind of a loss for me, but it is what it is.
So while you mentioned player props, I think we should just dive right into that, because I know that was a big topic of conversation before we got started here. I usually stay away from player props. I have a story, but I'll say it after you go. I know you're a big player prop guy. Who are certain guys that you love to bet on, or certain different kind of props that you look for night in and night out?
Yeah, so I think one that a lot of kind of the sharper guys are on more and more lately is the shot props, so the shots on goal. So a good example lately, like we were saying, Cole Caulfield was over 2.5, just money every other, or pretty much 3 out of 4 games for the last month. And a lot of it just revolves around finding more usage. So he just went from, and he's obviously a shooter to begin with, and as he kind of settled back into the lineup and they just kept getting more and more depleted, he went from fourth line, some second power play minutes, to second line, power play one. And the numbers are just staying the same. And I find that's the same, like, with a lot of the NBA player props are obviously huge for some of the bigger bettors. Mm-hmm. And they'll just stick with it on guys over and over. Like, half the time they're playing the same guys. The spot matters a lot, but like, generally it'll be just a line is a little too low for one guy a couple nights of back to back to back. So
you said MDA player props?
MDA, yeah. Which I dive into, but I kind of just, usually as a starting point, I just have like 4 or 5 guys on Twitter I love and kind of from there. The other concept we were talking about earlier with the NHL shot tracking. So basically what I had been saying is just it needs to get a little sharper. There's been way too many times this year where I could send in a video of 4 shots on goal from a game and you need 3. And I get that obviously that's not the most important thing to a lot of people. But with that said, this is obviously a huge market with regards to the NHL being able to get some extra revenue. And if you look towards the NFL and the NBA, obviously they're doing it a little better, a little sharper, and they're having people really, really get into that. So I do think, especially when it blows up on New York and so on, we'll probably hear about it a little more, that it just needs to be a little sharper.
And that's where all the money's made, right? It seems like I keep seeing on Twitter these like $2 parlays for 5 different players in the same game to have like, you know, over 2.5 shots on goal. And that's
great.
That's where you see like the $2 parlay hit for $100K. So that's why I think it's really exciting. you know, to have it in New York. Cause I'm it definitely isn't.
Obviously that is where some of the sucker betting comes into play.
Yeah. But low risk, high reward.
Right. And the thing is, I think like with the really sharp guys, people really are putting a lot of work into the usages. And the other thing is like, obviously you're getting a lot more off of say like Columbus compared to playing Boston with regards to shot attempts. Mm-hmm. So there's just things like that. And obviously there's kind of less that goes into it with hockey. Like generally for mine, I still really like to just kind of a combination of the spot and really watching the player and kind of what they've been doing. Whereas with basketball, I think a lot of the really sharp player prop guys are just, they'll just pour into the data and just look at like this team's allowing a lot more perimeter threes or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And then just figure out the usages. And it just kind of revolves around that. And I don't know if there's as much kind of to go off in hockey, but.
Well, you did say Boston, and I have not placed a prop bet since the 2019 Stanley Cup Final Game 7. It was St. Louis and Boston, and I'm going to tell you one of my worst betting experiences ever. I bet that night the Boston Bruins to win, money line straight up, and I also had Braden Schenn and Jaden Schwartz under half a point, and I'm pretty sure Jaden Schwartz assisted to Braden Schenn to put the Blues up 3-0 in the third period, and I was like, oh my fucking God. I just lost everything.
<The worst. laughs> Yeah, that's
it. Was like the dagger, you know, the dagger in the game. I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Player props are so funny that way too, because like there's so many where the line is so low, like you're looking so bad for so, like especially goals. Mm-hmm. Like I had a big one on Ovi to score anytime versus Detroit the other week, and I had the Caps to win in regulation, and it was like the most boring game coming out of the break. Mm-hmm. And it was whatever, I think 2-2 late, and like classic Obi one timer trickles through, pretty soft one, and it just swung the whole game. Like I was watching the whole game like, this is so boring, how did I bet on this? And then just like one stupid little shot trickles in, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm good now.
Well, that's so, that's what you were saying before, you're like, when you hit a prop you feel like a genius, but when they, you know, don't hit, you just feel like an idiot.
Yeah, and he had such a quiet game, and it was just like, oh, this is a dumb one. And they're always typically like, they do take a little too much juice on any time goal scorer, where like if you actually run the numbers, it's pretty quick to see like whatever, it'll be like some random score and it's 3-1, and you look and it's like 20 goals a year, and then however many come in two goal games, so he's actually only scoring like 15 out of 80 contests. So like once you dive into it, it's like, okay, yeah, the numbers don't exactly add up. But
it's funny too, I was actually, I don't know why this, I mean, I do know why this just came to my head, but last night one of my friends texted me, I think we should take like every Julius Randle prop, he's probably gonna go off tonight.
I played the double double. Just,
you did?
Yeah,
well, last night that whole controversy, we're recording this on Saturday, or today's Friday, you know, the day after the Celtics Knicks game, and the first half Julius Randle's playing probably the worst game of his season, and that's when the Knicks fans are all over him. And then, you know, he turns it around, he's probably, you know, aside from Fournier, he was a big part of that comeback. And then today, you know, the whole story around the Knicks is that Julius Randle basically told the Knicks fans to go fuck themselves or shut the fuck up, whatever it was. And, you know, like my friends, just like the roller coaster of emotion that goes into betting on a certain player is so funny, because the first half, you know, my entire group chat's like, Julius Randle fucking sucks. And then second half, it's like, I love him, MVP. You know, it's just so
funny.
That was
a popular one last night. I saw, like, I think pretty much everyone was, did he get to 21?
I'm not sure, because I didn't take it. I, like I said, I don't really like prop bets.
And I just refreshed and was looking at the boards, and I was like, ugh.
Julius Randle had 22 points and 8 rebounds. So, no, he did not get a double-double.
But he, no. I know he didn't get but the points. I think the points was 21.5. You know what? I feel like this is another good one to bring up, where I don't know why some people get so competitive and kind of like I know my double double missed, but I still would be stoked to know everyone else got their 21.5, even though I took one. And I feel like sometimes, I don't know if it's the people who've had like too many bad experiences or what, but I'm like, still like, I want everyone to hit, you know what I mean? Like the money's coming from the books. I don't know why some people kind of get like a bit of a hateful mindset towards gambling and so on. Hopefully it doesn't kind of hang around.
I was saying, I could tell you one more. My roommate in college, my freshman year, his first ever bet was Falcons money line in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. So he might have a bad taste in his mouth.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I just feel like sometimes if you read it online, some of the commentary is kind of negative, and it's like, I don't know why there's any point to that.
Yeah, no, 1,000%. I do want to go away from gambling for just a quick minute because there is an elephant in the room to bring up here. It says in your Action Network bio that like you're a huge Tom Wilson supporter and this is a Rangers show. So we got to go into why that is.
I was actually considering hanging my Tom Wilson jersey up on the back.
You should have. That would have been a statement.
I want to be given a fair shake because then everyone's just going to hate everything I say right away, I think. Mm. But yeah, I do love Tom Wilson. I think everyone says it all the time, but if he was on your team, you'd love him.
I would.
And I do think he gets a bad, I mean, obviously he gets a bad rap. He's but he is so like, Oshie commented on this the other day. He's just so strong and it's hard to like, I think there's been a lot of incidents where I don't really know exactly what he was supposed to do differently. And it kind of went so bad. Like the one hit I always talk about is the Aston Reese hit where it's like, you play hockey, you know, you lower yourself to get
play with Aston Reese actually.
Yeah. And like he watch, they're going head on so clean and Aston Reese lowers himself for leverage, like so low and he just gets blown up like so bad and it happens. And then that one ends up being three playoff games. Like, I just think there's been a few where it's just not what it is without Tom Wilson. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's so many though. It's hard to defend them sometimes.
I mean, I'd be more than happy if he was a Ranger. I'm not going to lie. Like he kind of reminds me not necessarily of what like Sean Avery used to be, but Sean Avery definitely had like a, you know, negative viewpoint from fans and stuff. He was always out there stirring shit. He just wasn't as big and strong as Tom Wilson is. You know, Tom Wilson just actually can do damage because he's a monster.
And he does a lot of things well. Like he really is. He's just so good. And I think this year's a good case in point because they've been so short, so many guys, and he's up like somewhat close to a point per game and the team's still succeeding. And he's been doing it without Backstrom, mainly without Oshie a bunch, without Mantha. Like at some point it's like, okay, he obviously must be pretty good. He's on the top line. The team's doing good. So even going back to the cup run,
he was huge in that cup run. He actually, I remember because I bet the, it's funny how you remember games by what you bet too. Cause I bet the Capitals to win the Eastern Conference that year, actually also on a futures bet, which was insane that I hit that. And then I had the Caps in game seven. They were, I think like plus
240 or sorry, not two. I always, that's the other thing. So I work in decimal, but I always convert it for the American readers, but I personally find it a lot easier. So when I say 240, I mean 2.40, which is decimal, but in American, that's plus 140.
Yeah. I was gonna say that would confuse me, the decimal. Yeah. I kind of like how we do it, especially since like my unit's usually just 100 bucks. So it makes it so much easier for me.
Cause that's just true. Like, but decimal, like it's, I think they're both easy ones to get used to it, I guess, but
yeah,
I've learned to convert for action.
Mm-hmm. But Tom Wilson did make a huge play in that game seven against Tampa. He had like a massive hit, I think, in the neutral zone and then made the pass to Ovechkin for that one timer. That was a great play.
That play was sick. It was funny. I was on a trip with my girlfriend at the time, and there we were at the hotel, like just got in to watch game seven. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like texting her like, they better fucking win or Nick's gonna be so
your bad. Night's ruined. Yeah.
Yeah, and literally like that was, I still say that was my favorite Caps goal. The like Wilson drops it to Kuz, slides it over one timer. It was like first minute of game seven, and obviously those have gone pretty bad. I had a good feeling about that one, but like
Burakovsky puts home two and puts the dagger in Tampa. Yeah, that was a sick game. That whole playoff run was awesome.
That was the best. That was like, especially after the years before, like there's so many of those playoff game sixes and sevens that I would say are like the worst sporting event I've watched. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Rangers are a part of that too. The Rangers game seven against Tampa on home ice. That was like the worst experience of my life. That was horrible.
Oh, I thought you were going to say when the Rangers won on the little ricochet, the overtime game seven goal. Was it 2015
in round two?
Stepan.
I was there.
One of the best moments I've ever watched.
I was at the game. That was the best moment. Yeah, that was awesome.
They were playing pretty good that year. Like that was the first time I was like, okay, I think they could maybe go on a run. And I liked that team a lot. And that goal sucked. And just the way it happened, like the shot block just dropped to him. And I was like,
I was fortunate to be at a lot of those Ranger Caps playoff games when they were going at it like every year. I was also at the game where Brad Richards scored that tying goal and then Stahl won in an OT in, I think, 2012. That was a sick one.
Well, it's a possibility this year. We'll see. The division's so stacked, but like it's up there on the more likely ones. I could see it being 2-3 or 1 versus wild card.
Either way. Well, let's go into some playoff talk. I know that, you know, there's some certain things that you look for when you are taking a pick or taking a side or prop, whatever it may be. And I know that kind of gets escalated in playoff time just because things seem like they're a little more predictable in the playoffs. You know, I obviously feel way more confident when I bet in the playoffs just because, you know, I'll take a team like, what was it last year? Toronto, Montreal. I'm like, oh, there's no way, there's no way Montreal comes back and wins the series. I'm betting Toronto to close it down. And then, you know, sure as shit, they win three in a row. So like, what are the things that you look for, I guess, you know, maybe just in a particular game and then also like how it escalates in the playoffs, things that you look for.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's a really good example where it's like nothing, although Toronto did get pretty unlucky, probably aside from game seven, where you could see they kind of just went flat, but nothing has to happen, which I think is kind of a good way to look at it, especially as series run along. I thought a really good example of that was the Montreal Vegas series where Vegas were still being heavy. And they're obviously close games, but I'm making this point from the perspective that Vegas were still a heavy favorite in every contest, whereas the series wore along. Like by game seven, I really liked my Montreal. I don't know what I got them at, but it was a pretty big plus number. But if you really, so I think everyone had the mindset like Vegas are so much better on paper, their roster so much stronger, more talented.
I thought Montreal, that.
Yeah, and that's obviously a perfectly reasonable, like, it's not like it's necessarily wrong, but they had fallen into such a good rhythm of like allowing just the chances they wanted to give up to Vegas and not offering like true breakdowns. So everyone was going off about how good Price was playing, which he was, but like it was a lot of like he wasn't moving, he's getting set for his shots, and even the deeper ones were still like for him savable. So I thought they did a really good job of that, and it was almost like they're kind of counterpunching comfortably where they were just gonna like get the more true breakdowns and just like plays through the box and like that, which is so something I like to watch for. And obviously I use expected goals and believe in it, and it's kind of supposed to be used over a bigger sample size, so you're not going to look at like I'd say three games of a playoff series and use the expected goals for too much when you could just pour through the clips and like see what's kind of happening. And the one point I always like to make is that there's certain plays that are going to show so inaccurately in the data because it doesn't track where the puck came from. So different teams are obviously more or less talented at creating these super high danger,
plays
through the box where they just break it, like snap it back. And the goalie's ultimately got like a no chance on the play. And I put some of these in when I made that expected goals article where it's like, just clips that are they're going in as like, and especially ones where guys end up really deep down, like really close to the goal, they can track obviously because when people try wraparounds and all those factor in, the data says that a guy scores from that shot on that point of the ice like whatever 2% of the time, but when it comes like two passes across the seam and the guy's tapping it in, and obviously I think this correlates when you look at the teams that generally overachieve with regards to expected goals, usually it's some of the ones that have more the kind of guys you'd expect. And then kind of like the Kings, whatever, teams like that, the Ducks last year before they obviously
turned it around.
So teams like that that have less skill and less of those playmakers, and I think obviously shooting talent is a factor, but I think people undercredit how much the passing is a factor. I think like Panarin is like for Rangers fans is a perfect example. Like he's good and he hates, like he's just so smart. He hates those burner shots and like makes so many good plays. But yeah, and then so the other factor is like when you try a play like that. So if you're like try to snap it through the seam and a guy deflects it, whatever, it tracks as nothing in the data. So especially for teams with more of a team-wide mindset towards trying those and more guys that are good at it, it can really kind of short them. But at the same time, like I obviously use expected goals data.
Can you explain a little bit more about like just what goes into the expected goals data? Like what, just for someone who wouldn't really know, because I didn't really know the expected goals stuff until 3 months ago when I started at Action.
Right. And the models are building more and more. And this is the other thing. We don't even know. It's interesting to think what the teams have, because with obviously their analytical departments, they probably are using different stuff. But so with expected goals, they track where a shot is taken from the ice, what the most recent event was. So they do track stuff like turnovers because that does factor in. But the main thing is it doesn't track puck movement, which is where it can. So they have a huge database of all the goals over however many years and all the shots. So then it can calculate what percentage of the time a shot should go in from a certain spot on the ice. And it does factor in, like, they're getting, I think the models are getting better and better. Like, they factor in whether it's a snapshot, wrist shot, backhand, blah, 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 whether, like, what the chances of scoring based on that. Mm-hmm. But that's where you still see these teams. And I love this point, and it looks good again this year. So my summer example was the Caps, because they're like plus 145 over the last 4 years compared to what they're expected, which is like, you look at the guys, they love these seam plays.
Yeah.
And like, it's literally known that the team doesn't like the stupid Will Burner shots. And then you look at the shooters, and obviously there's some above average talent there, and they're plus 15 again this year, like as after I looked yesterday. So it's just basically the idea that like the data gets a little curved because one of those goals, like one of those plays, it can be almost a sure goal. Like you can watch the highlight, like he's finishing that whatever 90% of the time. And then in the data, it counts as like 0.1. Yeah. So that's where, and I think if you really watch in playoffs, and again, like I like, and this is the thing, like obviously those balance out to an extent and it's a problem for everyone. So it doesn't, it's not like I'm saying the data is useless at all. But it's just like some teams create a little more consistently, where I just think it's one more thing to watch for and try to factor when you consider kind of that data with regards to gambling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you are looking at a matchup and you're like preparing your article, preparing, you know, what you want to talk about, what you want to focus on, is that the first thing that you're looking for is the expected goals? Like for me, I immediately, I like to break it down in like a 3-game segment. I always look at how that team's playing over 3 games, and that genuinely usually decides like what I'm going to take. You know, but which is weird, 'cause like last night I took the Minnesota Wild on the road against Boston, but Boston had won their like 3 games in a row, and Minnesota had lost five in a row. But then you kind of have to add in that desperation factor too, right? So I want to bring up to you the Edmonton Oilers. Like, if you're a sports bettor, they've lost now, I think, 5 in a row. I'm betting on them probably every game because they're due for a win. I mean, yeah. I know they're struggling right now, but they're a good enough team where they're going to figure it out at some point. Like Minnesota was the same exact thing.
So I kind of, I don't know about specifically the Oilers as an example though, because I kind of think they're just a little flawed. Mm-hmm. Like they were, I retweeted that cup article I did in the summer, mm-hmm. and I put them as a sell in it. Like I was saying, I wouldn't bet it at the current line because I think it's easy to think they should get there with like McDavid and Drysdale leading the way, but there's just the goaltending so bad and the detour. Like I think if you look at it, like Keith and CeCe could be like their fans here, and obviously I hear it a lot living in Calgary. People here love to rip on the Oilers.
If there's one,
it's absurd. They like it's funny for all the years they're both really bad and like not cheering for either team. I have so many friends that'll be like a fan of one or the other, and they just love to just rip on each other
about who's worse. They don't
even care. It's just like, you guys suck more. Like,
yeah.
I like the Neil and Lucic trade was a good example of that, where it's like both contracts were kind of bad. Although Lucic is having a good year, but and all the back and forth was just like about who won the trade. And it was just such a point of pride and like stuff like that. Like when Neil scored 20 like tap-ins on the power play, all the Oilers fans were getting on the flames about it. And then now that it's the opposite, it's just funny here.
Yeah. My dad likes to say you're comparing shit to diarrhea. You know, that's my dad's line.
And like, especially some of these recent years, they just love to like poke fun at each other. But like you look at a big picture and it's like, you guys have both kind of just been shit.
Yeah, I mean, that's how, well, not necessarily how it's been in New York, but, you know, the last couple of years, obviously the Calgary and Edmonton rivalry has been a little bit ignited because of the skill with like Gaudreau and Monahan. And then you throw in Matthew Tkachuk too. And then obviously McDavid and Draisaitl. But, you know, for me being a New Yorker, like I grew up and the Rangers were always really good, really relevant, you know, in my childhood, and the Islanders were kind of shit. And now, you know, finally the Islanders are getting somewhat good. And I think this rivalry is going to finally like have some value to it. And then, you know, this whole thing happens with the Islanders this year. But, you know, I know you're not necessarily a Flames fan, but being in the middle of that battle of Alberta, how exciting is it just like in Alberta right now with those two hockey teams being so relevant? I mean, that's all I want in a Ranger Islander rivalry is for both teams to be good. I know like there are some fans though who just want their team to be good and their team to be complete shit, but I'm one of those guys who like
wants to be competitive. Pretty much everyone in this province would rather the other team be complete garbage.
Yeah.
But it is super fun to see them battle. And to go back to the question about like looking at the matchup, the like first step of my process is, and this is what makes it hard, because I really do feel like I just do worse when I sit at home just watching center ice, like channel surfing three games. But I first step is, I just try to really make sure I have a good feel for where the team is at. I like to watch, like I base a lot of it off eye test, and then I'll look at it here and there, but I try to really like just feel comfortable with where a team is at, having watched them a lot. And then there's some like, you have to balance a bit of like where a team kind of should be at and like the spot. And obviously, especially with the NHL, like it's so kind of back and forth night to night, where like you do have to factor in all those things. Like, yeah, Minnesota was a good one last night. They probably started to get a little undervalued there. Although I do think Boston are going to be one of the top teams. But yeah, like I think that's one of those teams where like considering the spot and how good they've been, it's kind of hard to not look towards them there. And I think there's just a lot of that in the NHL where you kind of got to think about it like night to night and then try to really watch about where a team is kind of at. It's funny because I actually went on an article to take the Oilers in that Rangers game just because it was...
You were on a hot streak. You won like 9 in a row, and then I saw you took that, and I was like, I don't know.
And it was such a good price, and I kind of went away from my own game there a bit because I was kind of surprised, and it did end up getting a ton of closing line value. Like I almost I could have even just put some of the Rangers, but they really have looked pretty bad when you really think about it like, with an honest opinion. It's like yes, they have to win, but the goalies suck and the defense sucks, and they're just like not getting depth scoring. They're not even getting scoring from the big guys right now. Like it's kind of a struggle, but
You gotta expect them to turn it around at some point. No, like they're not gonna miss the playoffs. Like there's no way.
I was looking at it. Moneypuck has them like so low, which I don't know if that's fair, but they do have, because I believe in the Stars. I think they're a little Jekyll and Hyde, but I still think like they're a little more balanced than the Oilers. Obviously, they don't have as much top end talent, but still, and they had a pretty good game last night, and I think they were. They've played four less games and they're 6 points back or 4 points back. But I looked at it last night and I thought they could easily take it. The Jets and the Oilers are close. If the Jets win the next game, they'll have taken it on even games. And then even Vancouver only 3 points away now, which I still
don't know. They're rolling.
Vancouver are better than Edmonton, but there is a ton of back pressure. Like they could easily end up, like one of those teams just needs to go on a good run. And the other thing, the Stars have two pretty strong goaltenders, which could be pretty notable down the stretch. So we'll see. I honestly am kind of leaning towards they could miss, which would be crazy, but
I mean, I think that would blow up the entire operation, if you ask me. I think McDavid's out of there if they don't make the playoffs. That's insane.
He's too good of a guy though. He won't, like, he's never bitched about anything.
Yeah.
He just takes it. I think if it was like some of these other sports, he'd be like, I'm done.
2 years. I mean, you kind of could say the same thing about Ovechkin. It took him like 14 years to win a cup. Could have been out of there after all the backlash he got for never getting out of the second round, you know?
Yeah, that's, I know that's another crazy one for hockey, where like thinking towards the playoffs, like people don't really factor in the situation. Like I know everyone loves to rip on the Leafs here, it's the same thing, but with that said, and especially because playoff hockey's so close, like the margins are just so tight when both teams are at such a level. And like going back to that Blues year when Boston easily could have won that series, won the cup. Toronto take them to 7 and it's the closest series, but they end up losing. And then it's another first round exit and everyone's completely shredding them for being like heartless and blah, 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 choking. And it's like, it didn't exactly choke.
That wasn't a choke. I mean, last year was a choke. That year was not a choke. Yeah. Last year was a choke.
But even then, the efforts, like they probably shouldn't have gone to game 7 ever, but they definitely did choke in game 7. You could see that they kind of
even game six I think they had a lead and blew it, and then Kotkaniemi,
well, that's where it gets harder and harder. Like I think I saw this with the Caps, where like once that's the narrative, it's harder and harder to break it. Like you're then playing that pressure that like this is our history, this group's been through this, we haven't fared well, where like sometimes I think it helps to just kind of have a fresh slate. And like I think some of those years, you can just feel it. Like the one when they lost to Pittsburgh the year before they finally broke through, you could just kind of feel in the game 7, it was not good. And then even then though, like these things always come down to such, and Holtby said it too, like when he was asked, what did they do differently? He said, like, we got one more bounce. Cause even the year they finally won, Kunackle hit the post like 2 minutes before they go down and score. Mm-hmm. But then the year before when they lost, they arguably played the early part of the series better, but dug a hole.
Yeah.
And then they played pretty good throughout. And even in game seven, it was a little flat. But if you remember the knob Obi hit in the slot, it was like a chance that came through and it was 1-0 and it hits Fleury's knob and he's like laughing about it. But mm-hmm. you could just feel they're dead. Like they needed that. So it just, they do, like, I feel like people always kind of forget how close the margin is in the playoffs, where it's like, mm-hmm. that's a big thing. Like the betting obviously is like, once a team is at such a level, it's hard to like warrant a huge like minus 200 favorite sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially, I agree. If the play hasn't dictated as such.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, before I let you go, I'm gonna ask you one final question, but before I ask it, I want to give you a minute to, you know, plug anything. Where can people find you on Twitter, Instagram, your Action Network, stuff like that?
Sure. Yeah. So
I don't even know if I have you on Instagram. I'll have to follow you on Instagram after this.
Yeah, I don't really have a like a work one, so my Instagram's kind of just else or
just pictures of champagne in the hot tub.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Actually, my team sent in, like my men's league team sent that in to get a cameo from Sean Avery. So,
oh really?
They surprised me. And he went on, like, it's pretty funny. I'll have to send you it. He goes on for like 3 minutes just chirping. Like, yeah, it's pretty good.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I've been praying to run into Sean Avery in the bike lane in New York City and just have him kind of rip me to shreds, but then give him a hug, tell him I love him. There's an Avery jersey right here.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. He's something. So yeah, I'm at @NickM_hockey on Twitter. And then anyone who wants can follow me on the Action app, and it should be pretty easy to find.
Is it Nicholas Martin on Action or Nick Martin on Action on the
Nicholas
app?
Nicholas K. Martin is okay. Where on our app where you can follow the public picks.
Definitely recommend following him. I've learned a lot from him, and he's, like I said, you were getting hot until you took the Oilers over the Rangers. So I don't know how you've been doing the last couple of days, but you know, I usually read your stuff and take your picks too, because I'm a big fan of your work.
Yeah, article's been pretty good. It was funny. I remember I had whatever that streak got to, like I had the ridiculous streak earlier in the year. I don't even know how, and it was funny because I actually wasn't doing very good overall at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I like flipped it and started doing good with like personally and losing articles. But yeah, it's funny thinking back that I thought this was a reasonable thought at the time. I took the Kraken to beat the Knights and it's
opening snapped. Night.
No, like 2 months after 2 months in the season, whatever it was. And it was like even close to pick 'em, which is, it's funny thinking that this is like a rational thought at the time. Mm-hmm. And that snapped like my biggest article streak ever.
Yeah. I mean, the Kraken, I've been banging against them like every game the last couple of games.
Well, and they're literally playing well. It's like it started here, they're getting unlucky. And now I think they're kind of deflated.
Yeah. Well, without Tanev, too, Tanev's a big loss for them. Season ending injury.
Yeah.
Give me three teams that you would pick right now to win the Stanley Cup futures bets. I don't know what the odds are, but three teams you would maybe have a good value on at least. Like, you know, Vegas is like plus 600, which isn't really worth it.
Yeah, well, the thing with the Western teams, like I was saying this to my friend yesterday when I was thinking about if we were just talking about if you had three teams, who would you take? But the Western teams are going to have such an easier road. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the factor when you look at their prices is like they're going to have to win two considerably easier series. When you look at the East, like I think the eight teams in right now in the East are pretty much the ones we're going to see. I don't really think any of them are going to drop out. Mm-hmm. Maybe if the Islanders went on a crazy run, but like, right now, Boston, the wild card, I think they're still pretty legit. And like, obviously that's not a great first round matchup. And kind of looking at it, like we talk about Toronto in the first round thing, it could easily happen again. They're probably going to play Tampa or Florida in the first round. Mm-hmm. Or almost certainly going to play Tampa or Florida in the first round. So that's pretty tough. I don't know what they're at lately, but I would say Carolina are a team that I'd liked, but they're obviously going to get the bad end of that, a tough division sequence as well. I liked the Avs at the start of the year, and I still like them. I think if you can get them at like plus 600, plus 550, whatever it is, I think for the chalk, they're pretty reasonable when I just consider, you know, they're probably winning more than 1-4. And then, you know what, I'm going to just pull up.
Yeah, I'm pulling up DraftKings right now. That's what I'm looking at.
I haven't actually done cup futures in a bit. I will give one out that I think, I don't know if in the US it's, but I just went in on it today. Vasilevsky's plus
Vezina.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with this. Oh, it literally just went down though. So in the whatever. So yeah, Vasi still at plus 500. I think it's good. It was plus 600 this morning, but it really is such a team stat. And he is, I mean, he's the best goalie in the world on top of that. And I just think Tampa are going to keep giving him such a reasonable chance to win. And so I think Vazzy, if there's a good future that I just placed, I hadn't really looked at the cup in a bit, but
right now I'm looking at on DraftKings, the Avs are the favorite to win the cup at plus 550, which is ridiculous. That's too low for me to take a futures bet right now. And then that you got Toronto and Tampa at plus 700, followed by Vegas from Florida at plus 800. Carolina's at plus 14. That's a good number to get on.
Oh yeah, that, and it's, I'm looking at, and it's funny, this is obvious, this is a good example, especially for futures. It's so worth shopping books if you can at all, which I know is hard in New York, but like Carolina are plus 900 on bet365 where I'm looking.
Oh wow. Now.
So honestly, the Pens at plus 1600 is probably reasonable.
As soon as Saturday morning hits at 9 a.m., I'm putting in like three futures bets on like DraftKings. Yeah. And
I wonder what your guys' options will be. But yeah, I honestly, I still think the Avs at that, it seems square, but like they're going to have an easier route. And then I don't mind the Knights either. Like, again, I definitely see that the West is much easier. Like, I think I posted that stat today in the article about how St. Louis are second in win percentage in the West. They'd be seventh in the East. Or seventh overall league, rather. But it is just such a factor when you look at it and think about them, the likelihood of them having to win each series. And then, as we know, once you get to the final, it's going to be pretty close. You just have to try to get through one series. And obviously, those teams are talented enough to do it. So I just think that does better their odds so much when you really look at it. And the one I've actually kind of gotten off a bit in the summer, they were in my buy article at 2,300. But I wouldn't actually play the Panthers at plus 700.
No, me either.
I think with how brutal that bracket is, like we said, they're probably going to go Leafs, then have to play Tampa or something like that, which is just a brutal first two rounds. And I still think the depth defenseman, and who knows kind of what they're going to see from Bob. And when you look at a team like Tampa, I think it's a lot easier to think Vasilevsky. And yeah, like last night, Kucherov and Point looked insane again. And
so I was just watching,
thinking like we might just see the exact same story again, where they get there, they have the best goaltender, the power play's ridiculous. And as much as it's kind of easy to like, you just think like no one three-peats, you get grinded down so hard, blah blah blah, like how many teams have realistically kept the roster together like they have, and like they're only looking better and better, and they just keep having more kids come up from Syracuse that are so good, like that Taylor Radish kid.
Yeah, he's good. And then you add Corey Perry.
Yeah, he's been a huge addition.
Yeah, he's got like 12, 13 goals already.
Yeah, and not with much usage for most of it. So yeah, there's just a lot. And so Florida, obviously, if you had a ticket at a longer price, you're still liking it. But like, I think people have kind of started to maybe overrate their playoff chances a little bit. And that's not like, I respect that they're one of the best teams in the league. I just think it's like, when you really look at the numbers and the situation, it's going to be tough.
I agree. And Nick, I want to thank you again for coming on. I got to run, unfortunately, but hopefully we'll get you back on right before the playoffs start. We can maybe put in some good playoff bets for people.
Yeah, sounds great.
But I appreciate you. And, you know, obviously anyone listening, go follow Nick on Action, because he does do a really good job with the betting and he'll win you a lot of money. So I appreciate it again, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
I want to thank my friend Nick Martin and Alexis Downey once again for coming on the show. The Rangers are looking to wrap up this West Coast trip on a strong note. So far, they're 1-1, and they got the LA Kings tonight at 10:30 Eastern. They're in San Jose on Thursday night at 10:30 Eastern, and then they're in Philadelphia on Saturday at 7 o'clock Eastern, and then they won't play again until next Wednesday, January 19th, when they're home against the Toronto Maple Leafs, which should be a great game. But a lot of big games coming up for the Rangers, and hopefully they can get back to being fully healthy. That's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. If you ever have any questions or any topics you want me to talk about, please just shoot me a DM. I usually record the episodes on Sunday, so if you can send me a DM closer to Sunday, this way I can talk about it on the episode, that'd be great. But thank you all for listening as always. I love you guys, and let's go Rangers.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.